Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in again. And hopefully, the technology gremlins will not be present as they were last year. What a hassle that was. We actually found out that we had a flash crash. What the heck is a flash crash? That's when you the switchboard that we operate on, which is a software generated, comes out of Blog Talk Radio. They actually made some updates, and it caused for, and it's really run a lot of flash. When you turn on the mics and do all that, it's based in a flash technology. It turns out you got to clean out your cache and your history and cookies. So they did an update, and anyway, that's what happened. So we found out what the problem is. I think we've got it solved. It's rare to have those. It's actually been pretty flawless, so we're pretty pleased with the service they have. And, of course, about the time we get this working well, what do you think we're going to do? We're going to add video, and that's hopefully coming sometime in the first quarter. Working on that, a lot of exciting stuff. So not only will you be able to hear us, but you'll be able to watch all the topics. So like we got today, our special speaker is, our special guest is Mitch Kider with the WBK firm, and we're very excited to have Mitch on. He'll be giving us a regulatory update and a lot of questions. You guys are welcome to tweet or text me your questions. Text them to my cell phone, 512-632-2900, 512-632-2900. We'll bring them on. But when we get our new software up and running, which will include Blog Talk, but it's include video and hosting, you're going to be able to literally ask the guests online, real-time, questions right from where you're sitting. So it'll be a lot more interactive, and we're excited about that. First of all, I want to say thank you so much to all of our listeners. You are now 290,000 strong. We've had over 290,000 downloads of the broadcast, and we appreciate you being a part of it and telling others about us. Welcome to our first-time listeners who they're now you that are first-time listeners are joining now tens of thousands of mortgage professionals that listen to the broadcast each and every week and make this a regular part of your way of getting information about what's going on in the industry. I want to thank our very special sponsor, United Guarantee. Listeners, are you aware that United Guarantee's performance premium is the industry's only MI pricing that is truly risk-based? Also, are you aware that it is surpassing the simple tiered-based systems and broadening options for lenders and their customers? And you shouldn't think about this, especially as a contrast for against the FHA program. It's really got some power. With performance premium, your mortgage loans receive pricing that truly reflects the loan quality. So that's something that gets passed on to the consumers. Performance premium is the first MI pricing plan to examine the full range of mortgage risk attributes, generating a unique price for each loan that you originate. By considering a comprehensive list of loan elements, performance premium goes further and beyond just simple tiered pricing system, but truly gets into risk-based pricing. I would also like to just say this, that it gives you better price and better risk analysis that you can get to pass the savings on to your customers. So it's got expanded eligibility and expanded financing options, and you can check out Performance Premium, the whole program at United Guarantee. So it's UG.Corp, www.UG.Corp, or you can go to our website at Lincoln on Lending, and on the upper right-hand corner, click. You can click it, I guess. You can click on their link, and you'll get there, and you'll get you right to them. Be sure to reach out to one of their sales executives and ask about the Performance Premium program. Thank you, United Guarantee, for your sponsorship and this broadcast, and congratulations to over 50 years of service. Without further ado, let's get over to Joe Farr and find out what is going on in the market. So good to have you with us, Joe. The stock market, look at that.
Well, the stock market's up over 16,000 a day. Yeah.
I wonder who's causing that to happen.
You know, facetious.
We'll talk about that in a minute, right?
We will, yes.
Yeah, but we're having a good day today. We're up 12/32 on the day. It's been a little bit up and down. We have seen favorable price changes since some of the increase occurred after morning price sheets were put out. We've seen it be a little volatile since then, but we're still back at the high. We've come back to the highs, and some of this has been driven, most of this is being driven by comments from the Fed. This morning, really, we just continued what had started last week after Janet Yellen's statement and testimony before the Senate hearing on her confirmation. She was very dovish and has caused a real nice improvement in prices. In fact, we have recovered just about all of the loss in prices that we saw after that stronger-than-expected jobs report on the 8th. So those of you who were seriously hurting after that one-point drop in prices on the 8th, you're back to whole or within a couple 30 seconds being back to whole.
Well, last week you had Janet's comments about that. And when is the hearing?
Well, the hearing was on Thursday. The statement was released. Her written comments were released on Wednesday afternoon, and we saw a real nice improvement in MBS prices right after her comments were released. And then Thursday also, during her testimony, I don't know if it's testimony, but during the confirmation hearing, her comments caused continued improvement in prices. We saw that spill over into the beginning of today as well. And it's because the Fed's driving the bus. You know, everything depends on what they say and do. And this afternoon, in fact, right around 1 Eastern time, bullish comments from Fed member Dudley caused a drop in prices by an 1/8. Now, we've since recovered that. But it's just the focus of the market right now is the Fed and the Fed bond buying program. Yellen's comments at her confirmation hearing indicated she's a very strong supporter of continuing the bond buying program until economic data reaches a level that's strong enough to see sustained recovery. So that was good for both stocks, bonds and stocks. As I mentioned, we've just today exceeded the Dow hitting the 16,000 mark.
Yeah,
I was out Thursday and Friday, so I don't know if it did on Friday, Thursday or Friday also, but today we're up over 16,000.
Yeah, I totally missed her confirmation hearing. I wanted to listen to that, although we got that. So, yeah, thanks for bringing us up to date. So this week, you're looking forward to what we have. We've got, you know, some pretty significant items. On Wednesday is where the calendar really starts filling up, which includes the FOMC minutes. So any thoughts on all of this?
Well, it will be very important, probably be the most important piece of data during the week. It comes out, should come out at about 2 o'clock on Wednesday, and it will be the first time the minutes or the Fed has met since they'll be able to analyze the impact of the government shutdown. I'd be curious to see what they say about it in their minutes, because much of the economic data we've seen post close down has been relatively good, you know, as though the shutdown did not significantly impair the economic activity. So we'll see what the Fed had to say about that. Prior to then, we have economic data coming out in the form of inflation reports, CPI and PPI come out this week, Wednesday and Thursday. And then retail sales also comes out on Wednesday. That could be a big indicator of the direction of the consumer spending and therefore the strength of the economy. Existing home sales on Wednesday, and then jobless claims and Philly Fed round out the week. So my suggestion is pay close attention to what happens at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, 2 o'clock Eastern time, as the Fed minutes are revealed.
Any thoughts about the housing? Because we have existing home sales, you know, and they're anticipated to drop. I'm looking at your website, and it's anticipated that they're going to drop. Is this just a seasonally adjusted, or do you actually see this saying that we may have peaked when you look at housing. Your thoughts on that?
Well, no, these are seasonally adjusted, and I think that there's some expectation that the government shutdown took some people temporarily out of the market.
Out of the market, yeah.
Slowed down the process somewhat. And so the drop that they're anticipating is really pretty minor, and you would expect in a month or so from now it could probably be completely reversed.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. Yeah, a lot of eyes are going to be on that number as well. Joe Farr, thank you so much. There's so much information that's available to you listeners on the MBS Quote Line service. I recommend you stay on top of it, watch it regularly, pay attention to it. And, Joe, thank you so much for showing up each week and bringing
you.
Us the latest data. And may technology be with us this week all the way through this broadcast. Appreciate it so much. Folks, we're going to be right back. We'll be right back after this brief break with Paul Mahl. Will be coming up right after the break. Thank you.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We've got Paul Mahl on the line. He is live coming in from the D.C. area. Appreciate you, Paul, as you take a break from your keyboard to give us an update. I've got up on my website here all of your hot items here, but let's run through them real quickly. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dave. What do we got? Well, let's talk a little bit about last week. You mentioned one of your sponsors, I think, is UGI. They were one of the top writer of insurance in the third quarter of the MIs. Inside Mortgage Finance came out with its new rankings for the third quarter. Yeah, UGI rating MGIC. That's on the www.imfnews.com website. Late last week, we also had a ton of interesting stories about Pershing Square, the hedge fund run by Bill Ackman, the Wall Street veteran. Filed saying we own 9.9% of Fannie and 9.7% of Freddie Mac. This is the common stock, which was people are scratching their heads. I mean, you know, what's his play here? That's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
You know, my guess is from what, you know, we gather, he probably bought the stock at about $2 a share at least. And late last week it was over $3 a share, so you can do the math. He's already, seen his investment go up 33% if our numbers are right. So that's a fascinating story to see.
Well,
watch that. Of course,
you're going to say, what I'm more interested in is when does he choose to trade out and what will be driving that? That's, I think.
Right. I mean, how can you trade out when you own that much stock? I mean, it's not like you could sell it right away.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the market?
But
anyway,
it's very interesting. Yeah, and we had Fairholm, that other hedge fund, sending Treasury its plan about, you know, buying the MBS guarantee business of Fannie and Freddie. No one thinks that's going anywhere, but it's still fascinating to watch. Today on www.imfnews.com, we had our new subprime numbers have come out.
Yep.
You know, despite the crack up in the industry, there's still $418 billion of subprime servicing out there. That's down 20% from a year ago. So it's almost like subprime mortgages, you know, figure with the runoff and no one making new subprime loans, that who knows, we might be down to $150 billion or less in subprime debt in 2 years. So, and then, of course, everyone's so afraid of the new QM rules. There's some people predicting that, you know, volumes are going to drop off significantly unless we get some kind of, you know, changes to what's a QM and what isn't, and safe harbor, and that's another, you know, fascinating story to watch. Also on IMFnews.com, we had Rushmore Home Loans, a decent-sized wholesaler out in Irvine. They apparently cut staff in the last couple weeks. You know, they're not alone, by the way. There's been many other cuts in mortgage staffs over the last 2 or 3 months. So people are wondering, you know, when that's going to stop. Everyone's, you know, trying to right-size their companies for next year.
Right.
So that's interesting. On the M&A front, we know Cold Taylor Mortgage is still talking about, you know, selling to a private equity firm. There's not much new there, but, you know, talks are ongoing in the M&A business and servicing. We have Mountain View in Denver. They're out with another package of servicing rights. So there's plenty going on out there. It's, you know, an interesting time. News gets a little slow this time of year, but it's not really slowing down much, so there's plenty to write about.
I was going to say, yeah, with all that's happening. Yeah, I spoke on a panel at the MBA's Retained Servicing Conference last Wednesday with Howard of Cold Taylor Mortgage. Of course, trying to find out any information. Nothing could be shared, but it's fascinating, some of the M&A deals on it. And next week, we're going to have, I know you're always trying to get the scoop on M&A deals from myself and my business partner, Chuck Klein. Well, we're going to have Chuck Klein on the broadcast next week. So start saving up your questions. They're in a whole hot topic. It's dedicated M&A. So you may want to just dial in and stay here for that whole broadcast, Paul, because I know you're always trying to get him with some great questions. So if you're welcome to join us next week. Just so,
or I can go to him ahead of time and get all the good stuff from him and put it on our website before it goes on the air.
Yeah. Sure, you could do that for sure. Paul,
no, Chuck
so
had
much.
Some interesting things to say about. He was telling me about how compliance is driving M&A. That was an interesting tidbit. So I'm sure he'll talk about that as well.
Yeah, Mitch Kiter and I, Mitch, of course, is our special guest today, and I are speaking at the Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference the 3rd, 4th, 5th, whatever the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is of the first week in December in Florida. And so if you guys haven't been out there, listen to that or gone to the website, check it out. I would love to have you down there, Paul, but I'll call you from there, let you know kind of what's going on, give you a report if you're not going to be in there at that conference. But we'll be doing a live broadcast from the conference, the MBA. I just talked to Pete Mills, and he says, tell the listeners, come on down for this conference and be listening to the broadcast. So, Paul, love to have you down there and be with us, or at least participating. But I want to say, most of all, thank you for taking time out of your day to get here each day, each week, and give us an update. Appreciate it so much, Paul. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You bet. Well, folks, let's get Alice Alvey on. Now, Alice is dialed in from who knows where she's traveling. I think she's actually landed if I'm not mistaken, you have landed in San Antonio, Texas. Is that right, Alice?
Well, I'm actually in Dallas, Texas.
You're on your way.
Yeah. On my way over to San Angelo. You know, by the time you look at the flight time and the drive time, you might as well be in control of your own destiny and drive it. So rural Texas,
Well, good to have you on the broadcast. Good to have you in Texas, deep in the heart of Texas. Well, it's good to have you.
Yeah.
What do you have for a legislative update, Alice?
Well, it's, you know, right now everyone is focused on QM, as Paul was just talking about. You know, I just want to stress you've got to really address what your staff needs are, and we're here to help. So I'm going to put in a little plug. Give us a call. We're happy to help you with that training side of that, because that's really the bottom line right now, is don't lose sight of trying to keep your staff out of the fog. Right? I think that's just one of the biggest problems. We'll talk to Mitch more about that. So just kind of a brief update. We do have right now our final rule out for the homeownership counseling piece. We've all been knowing that we're going to have to give an extra disclosure starting January 10th. And I keep kind of comparing to everything is starting January 10th, but you know what? You might need to just start January 1st, make your life easier, get to the final rule, make this disclosure straight up for you. You need to have 10 housing counseling agencies appear on the list, you know, from your, in the zip code where the customer is or a street. You know, you have, there's some information in there to help you make sure that you create the right disclosure. And then match that up with your state regs. There's several states that require a homeownership counseling list as well. So maybe for many states, it's not an extra piece of paper. We still don't have word yet on the new good faith estimate until a lot of folks were predicting that we would have that combined disclosure since the CFPB's agenda was to get that out this quarter. We'll let you know as soon as we see something, and we'll certainly make sure that we talk about that on the show. From a bills standpoint, we don't see anything moving to try and give us any relief on this points and fees test. So for those of you who are still holding out that something's going to happen, we don't recommend it. The software companies have started rolling out their training pieces. You know, everybody's been so preparing as if this is going forward that the small camp out there that thinks they're going to somehow be able to stop this, I think is, you know, kind of playing with fire because it's too difficult to get around the curve if you hold off. So we don't see anything. There's Senate Bill 1577, which is really just focused on open-end financing. It's not even focused on our residential mortgages to get the points and fees test. And actually, that bill is going to make the points and fees test worse for open-end non-residential transactions. So different pieces of legislation, but nothing looking to happen before January 10th. The other thing that's been in the news that I don't think I heard Paul bring this up. I do want to make sure everybody's kind of watching this on the radar. It's been a California issue about eminent domain. It's now starting to spread a little bit. You know, again, it's about getting a message through. You know, a mayor or someone looks at their town and all the blight and they say, I've got to try and solve this. And there's an attorney out there with an idea on how to solve this. It's just a matter of once you convince people this is bad for mortgages, no one's going to lend in your area, they bail. But now someone's starting to throw the fair lending card out there going, hey, lenders, you know, you can't not lend in an area because otherwise it's a fair lending problem, right?
Yeah.
There we go. I disagree. I don't think that's a problem. You're allowed to, you know, the eminent domain makes it a purely legal bright line. Not anything, you know, on a disparate treatment or disparate impact basis. So that's getting legs. Just wanted to keep everybody in the loop. That's expanding. More states and more regions, more cities in more states are starting to look at it.
Yeah, more cities, more states.
Yeah, be aware of cities in your area that might be trying it because they need to learn from us on the problems that go with that. So that's my heads up for today, Dave. I'll send it back to you.
Well, it's good to have you with us. It's just floors me the ignorance that is out there in our state and local governments that would be suggesting, it's not state so much as local governments, municipalities are looking at a right eminent domain, what that can do to destroy housing finance in your communities. It's folks, if you have anything going on, you listeners, you have got to speak up. And if you have any trouble getting people's attention, I've got some folks that will be out there and really come in. I can tell you some of the Wall Street guys that are flying around trying to convince these municipalities. So we've got several that will be coming up as guests in future broadcasts. But love to get Mitch's thought on that, all that. So, Mitch, I know you're listening. Write down eminent domain. We got to get to that topic at some point in time. Alice, are you going to be able to stay with us all the way through? I hope you are. One for
yep.
Mitch's interview. I'm looking forward. Good. Okay, well, you're driving in the car. What you do mobily is just amazing.
Well,
outstanding. Well, folks, we're going to be right back with Tony Garitano right after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you tuning in, as you always do, and telling others about it. I do get a lot of feedback from people. I see it. Dave, thank you so much for having Tony Garitano on. It always giving an update. Tony's always giving us kind of the latest update on what's going on. And Tony, you were dialed in last week, as was our special guest, Mitch Kiter. And because of the flash crash, this was Yuri. I was wanting to turn on, say, I need that special hotline to Tony Garitano. Make this all work, Tony. What's wrong? But good to have you with us. Glad to see it working. A flash crash. What the heck is that? Sometime you have to explain it to me. But let's get into really what's going on. One of the things I wanted to ask you last week, Tony, you were there at the NBA annual conference, and there were many interesting technology things that were kind of kicked around, talked about. Wanted to find out what you found to be most interesting and really piqued your attention at the NBA annual this year.
Well, Dave, I think what I wanted to kind of talk to you about was a little bit about how disappointed I was. I didn't see any new technology initiative, anything that was particularly exciting. I think that it was a lot about compliance and the new rules that you guys have been talking about that are going to be hitting the industry January. I actually had someone come up to me and tell me, this doesn't even feel like an NBA annual. It feels like a regulatory and compliance conference.
Yeah, it's a great observation.
And I think a lot of the technology innovations are around how the technology vendors are going to be dealing with QM and QRM and also the servicing changes.
There's no question that technology has the ability to come in and impact this. I was with John Vong on several occasions over the conference. And there, I mean, you look at some of the things that he's doing. Talk about being in the right place at the right time. Do you see any other technologies developing that are really – that are catching your attention at all as relates to compliance?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, the one announcement that I was expecting to hear at the NBA annual was that FHA was going to be opening its doors to electronic signatures.
Yes.
And I understand that that announcement was delayed, but that it is still going to be coming by early 2014. And I really think that it's another barrier just kind of gone. And I think when lenders embrace technologies like electronic signatures, it really does make the process very transparent and very auditable. I think it does go a long way towards making a more compliant process. I mean, we saw the IRS accept e-signatures earlier this year. I mean,
right. It's
a pretty sorry statement when the IRS beats you to the punch. So I think FHA should get its act together.
Okay. Well, is there any reason, any insights you think why FHA, because we are all anticipating that, is there any reason why that did not come forward? Any insights? I saw Carol Gallot there, and I sat down and talked to her. I didn't even think to ask her that question because I would love to.
I believe they did make an announcement that they are moving forward with the project at the ResTech meeting. And
okay.
I think they did announce that they are on track and that they are going to accept MISMO standards, as we've seen with the IRS and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which makes things very convenient for the industry. So they're not trying to reinvent the wheel. And I understand that this next announcement is going to include electronically signing every mortgage document. So it will go all the way through to closing, which will be great. I hear there are lots of pilots. They're moving forward, and we should get the guidelines soon.
Well, as soon as we do, you're going to be giving us a report on it, I hope. And you are always so good because I love your balanced perspective on it. Not only, I mean, you sit and look at the colossal debacle or failure of Obamacare being rolled out from a technology standpoint. So, you know, at least the mortgage arm of the federal government has been getting that a little bit better than the healthcare part of it. So appreciate so much you being here with us, Tony. Anything that you think we should be really zeroing in on and paying extra close attention to? More consolidation, you see that continue, Tony?
Well, I did see that Ellie Mae acquired Mortgage CEO, which is a CRM application. So I think we'll see more consolidation for sure. I mean, the other thing that struck me about the Ellie Mae third quarter earnings was a very big dip in their revenue based on volume.
Yes.
And that to me is, you know, what I personally feared when all of the technology vendors started moving towards this software as a service model.
Yeah,
you know, if you're just an origination vendor and you're doing software as a service, mm-hmm. you know, your revenue is going to fluctuate with origination volume. And, you know, I think that that's going to be something that we should watch throughout 2014 because, I mean, the doc preps are kind of used to it, but it's very new for the LOS players. So it'll be interesting to see how the LOS players deal with it next year.
Especially as you look at their costs going up, Tony. I mean, their cost
exactly.
is the amount of work and money they're having to pour into this, rather significant. And if their revenue is going down, their costs are going up, that doesn't bode well for that stock price of Ellie Mae. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. Interesting. I could sit and talk to you about technology. Always fascinating. Good to have you with us. By the way, again, congratulations on having a great Engage event there at the conference. It's always fun to be attending that. That's on Sunday afternoons that just precede the conference. For everyone, for you that don't, that did not make it there, and it'll be there again next year, and Tony and his crew do a great job putting up a conference that is just kind of gets us all teed up, ready for the main conference. Tony, good to have you with us. Appreciate you being here, and look forward to having you back next week.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you.
You bet. You get a hold of Tony Garitano by getting a hold of him at 203-529-3131 or tony@progressinlending.com. The profit doctor normally would be settling in right here, but the profit doctor is off at the doctor and go, doctor, profit doctor, quit scheduling your doctor appointments. Well, this is one that's nothing emergency or anything, but he couldn't. This is one of those ones. This is when the doctors say, be here at this time to do this test. It's the guy, you got to be there. So we're missing out on the profit doctor, but he did want to pass along his greetings to everybody. And, you know, Baylor, and he's a Baylor, you know, Bear, big time guy. So I, you know, it kind of spares us listening to all this football talk as well. So I'm waiting for him to bring up a metaphor about the mortgage industry, mortgage accounting, profits, and the Baylor Bears. So anticipating that one of these times, folks. Appreciate you all being a part of this broadcast, tuning in. We've got Mitch Keiter coming up right after the break. Almost 30 long minutes, not long, short minutes with Mitch Keiter. There's just not enough time to get all the questions in, but I'm glad we have him on hold, and we're going to bring him on right after the break. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. We have as our special guest Mitch Keiter, and if you've been to the website, you're going to see that handsome rascal right there on the front page. I've got his picture up here. He is one of my favorite people because of the quality, the character, his commitment to this industry, and really his expertise. Not sure if – I think we may need to update. I've been at this 40 years. He is at 38 is what I have in the bio. That actually probably a few more years have ticked off since that was created. He is the chairman and managing partner of Wiener Brodsky Keiter PC, a law
international law firm there in Washington, D.C., that specializes in the representation of financial institution, residential, home builders, and real estate finance settlement procedure providers. He has also got 31 years as a practicing attorney and represented banks, mortgage companies, builders, credit card issuers, you name it, anyone involved in finance. He has also represented clients in investigative enforcement issues before HUD, VA, DOJ. I mean, the list goes on, but he's not someone who's a stranger to this broadcast. He's someone who's been with us over and over and time again, and we're just really thrilled and honored to have Mitch Kider on here. And again, folks, we tried to have him on here last week, but because of the flash crash, we couldn't get his mic turned on, had to shorten that broadcast up. So for those of you that take the time to welcome back and listen to Mitch, thank you so much. And Mitch, it's good to have you back, and appreciate you reserving two busy Mondays for our audience. Good to have you here, Mitch.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here with you.
It's always a pleasure, Mitch. I want to say thank you on behalf of our radio program and many listeners who always tell me they appreciate your passion for this industry and you're just protecting and watching over what's going on. And I want to get into the regulation. There's so much. As you were at the conference, you speak at the conference. And by the way, for those of you that are contemplating going to the Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference, don't contemplate it. Be there. Mitch is the keynote speaker speaking at the Wednesday or the Friday luncheon, and I'm speaking at the general session on that same day. Get out to that conference. We'll be doing our live broadcast from there, and Mitch, it'll be good to see you there, as it is always, the passionate advocate for our industry. Let's get in talking about some of the things going on, and we got Alice and Andy. Excuse me, Andy will not be here. Alice and Joe, who have a long list of questions. So let's get in talking about QM, QR limbs, the consequences of that. And so I'm going to lead off with the first question, then I'm going to go to Joe, and then Alice jump in as we can with this. And I don't want this to be too canned, guys. I just want this to really flow and to go where we need it to go. And there's some things that Mitch is doing now and focusing on. I want to make sure we take time to hear about that. But let's start off with non-QM loans. Mitch, one of the things we're needing is to bring the private markets back. We're looking at, you know, where this market's at. One of the things that was interesting statistics that David Stevens quoted from the platform was the fact that I believe it was 51% of blacks that were purchasing a home. The HUM data, and we're using Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac as their means by which they were to finance this, that they were disqualified, I mean, turned down to income ratios. 51%, that was a shocking statistic. Also, 28% of all Americans, this data comes from Zillow, 28% of all Americans have a FICO score of 620 or less, which means there's virtually little, if any, financing available. So we need to have non-QM loans, Mitch, come back into the market in some way, shape, or form. And I see some potential for that, but what's your thoughts for is there any way to do that given the risk associated with non-QM loans?
Well, you know, it's a problem, Dave. The reality is there are some real risks associated with non-QM loans, mostly by way of a defense to foreclosure. And so
right.
I think we may see, you know, we may see this rule really have an effect upon both the affordability and the availability of credit to borrowers that really need it the most. The issue that you really have is if the consumer, if the borrower ultimately goes into foreclosure, they can always raise in a non-QM loan, they can always raise a defense
yes.
by way of offset and recoupment.
And that's really the crux of the problem, Mitch. I mean, it's not that they don't want to. Look at Dan Pearl, who used to run a non-prime company back in California. He's back in, I believe it's the company called Citadel. He's trying to come into that. But how does someone like Dan Pearl or the folks at PennyMac, any try to enter in with even slightly of anything that's non-QM when they live at the risk of the litigation risk that's out there?
That's true. There's a fair amount of litigation risk that's out there, and what's most concerning about it isn't that they're necessarily going to lose a case or lose to that particular defense, but really what's concerning about it is in the context of a non-QM loan, which is really your basic ability to repay standard itself, if the borrower raises a defense to the foreclosure, you have yourself a judicial foreclosure, and that's expensive. It's time-consuming.
Right.
It's costly in terms of resources, both money and people. And so it's very tough. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to see non-QM lending. You're going to see non-QM lending. You're going to see it with banks. And banks are going to portfolio their non-QM loans, and then they're going to manage it along those particular lines. And they're going to manage the servicing as they go on.
Yeah, we have a lot of community banks that are there and there that are doing just that. Go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I wanted to follow up on that by asking how is the legal environment different in the future under a non-QM loan than under any loan right now as far as the borrower's rights against the lender?
Well, on a federal level, you don't have an ability to repay standard right now. And so there is nothing on a federal level that says that you can come up and challenge your foreclosure by saying this lender never should have made that particular loan because it was the lender's determination that I had the ability to repay. What's really changed in a non-QM lending context and the ability to repay rule is we've taken all personal accountability away from the consumer, away from the borrower, and we said, you come to us for a mortgage loan, it is our job and our job alone to make a determination that you have the ability to repay. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I bought my first home, when I bought my second home, I sat down and I made a determination along with my wife as to whether or not we believed we had an ability to repay.
Right.
I wasn't
right.
solely going to rely on a third party for that.
Yeah, and that followed up following an environment where whatever the terms were in the note were to be totally ignored by the servicer in order to help the customer keep his home. Kind of renders the mortgage instruments not very useful anymore, right?
Yeah. All of it is somewhat disconcerting to me. We were talking earlier in the program about eminent domain. We're talking here now about, defenses to foreclosure, which will, result in many settlements itself. What we need to do in this country right now is rebuild the secondary market and rebuild a secondary market beyond just the GSEs themselves.
Right.
I think, the people in the White House, the people on the Hill, they all agree with that. And yet we have these regulations coming out that are really pushing in just the opposite direction.
Exactly.
Alice, you're out there. I know you're driving away. Jump in anytime. Go ahead, Joe. Finish up your thought.
Well, I was going to just going back to the question about the community banks. Are they going? Do you hear that they're going to be active lenders in the market, or are you hearing people that are saying, "Hey, there's just going to be too much risk. I'm not going to do mortgage lending."
Well, I'd be curious to what you're hearing out there as well. But when it comes to community banks, lately I've actually been hearing that a number of community banks are really afraid to be in this market. They're afraid to move on along those particular lines, and they're afraid of the liabilities that are associated with it. And what are you guys hearing about that?
Well, I'll jump in on that. We're getting a lot of phone calls from community bankers that are scared, and so I can validate the concern. But those community bankers that are really getting into it and diving into it are doubling down on their mortgage commitment to the divisions that they have. For those that are not in it currently, boy, they're really doing their analysis, because what you're saying and representing is exactly pervasive throughout most of the community banks. But Alice, you travel around as well as I do, and I know you work with a good number of community banks. Your thoughts?
Well, I am getting a lot of calls from the community banks and smaller credit unions. And actually, I got an interesting one not too long ago from a bank down in Texas that said, "I don't get it. I just don't get it. For years, we're a 100-plus-year-old financial institution. We have lent basically, asset-based lending, right? The tax returns may not show the income that they want. They've got great collateral. It's a 50 LTV. They're certainly looking at the product aspect of QM and saying, I want to make sure I reduce my exposure to zero on the product, right? I'm going to make sure the balloon terms meet the requirement if I need the small creditor. I'm going to stop doing balloons if I don't, and I'll get the product right. And I'm going to get that DTI right. I'm going to make sure I'm at a 41 or a 42, but I'm not going to stop serving my clients." And so, Mitch, I guess I'd like to get your thoughts, especially for the small creditors that say, "I'm going to still do balloons. I'm still maybe going over the DTI because I've got cash or my borrower has cash. And I'm hearing a lot of banks go, I don't think my customer's going to sue me. So that isn't new risk for me. But I think they need a lawyer to kind of walk them through and make sure. And then there's also the financial side. Do you see loan loss reserves have to be increased? So I'm seeing folks who think they want to dip their toe in the water.
There's so much in what you just said over there. The community banks, it's so interesting as going one bank to another. It's the entire issue of risk and reward. Some of them see the risks is so great and the compliance risk is so great and they're shying away from it. Others actually see the reward. They see it as an opportunity. They see themselves being able to pick up some market share over here. There are some rules under the QM rule that assist the smaller community banks, the ones with, under $2 billion in assets that are lending in rural areas. There are some balloon loans that are allowable under those circumstances. And so there are some things that help them. But the really interesting thing is when the CFPB came out with their ability to repay test and the standards that they laid out there, they threw out the concept of asset-based lending. If you look at the 8 factors that they ask you to verify and to underwrite and to analyze when you make a determination as to whether or not there's an ability to repay, not one of those factors deals with the equity in the property. Not one of them goes to your loan-to-value ratio. You can have a loan-to-value ratio of 50 and fail the ability to repay test, which
right,
I thought
but what about
was
cash
very
in the
different
bank?
Than what we've seen.
What about cash in the bank, though? Have you heard anything on that? If my borrower has substantial cash reserves and, they've paid multiple loans back to my institution?
Sure. Well, you're going to be able to take that into consideration, obviously. The fact that, your consumer has the assets, has the ability along those particular lines. But when you, again, when you take a look at it, it doesn't play out very well at all because you're going to look at the borrower's current or reasonably expected income or assets. So if there's a sufficient amount in assets over there for you to show that, historically someone with that amount of assets would repay their loan. In other words, your underwriting criteria works. That's going to be very helpful. So cash in the bank is not something that was thrown out. That actually is always helpful.
Could you think people really understand the total consequence? I know when a lot of folks stop at the discussion, when it comes to, my customer can sue me in foreclosure. Could you elaborate for people on really what that means if you lose? So if they take you to court and you don't settle, you lose. Could you clarify for folks what happens next?
Let's take that example as a defense to foreclosure. It's not ultimately going to stop the foreclosure itself, but as they say in legal terms, it's a defense by way of offset or recoupment. So what happens is, number one, as we just discussed before, you're in a judicial foreclosure. You're in a lawsuit. You're not going to be able to foreclose until that lawsuit is completed, and that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. If you happen to lose, you are going to be liable for 3 years' worth of finance charge, court fees, and attorney's fees as well. So it's a very expensive proposition, quite frankly, which is going to lead to the situation where lenders faced with that type of scenario are, in fact, going to do some type of a cash settlement just to move the borrower out of the house, be able to foreclose, do a deed in lieu or something else along those particular lines. Otherwise, we're going to have another foreclosure crisis on our hands. We're going to have a tremendous backlog.
That's so true. That is a concern. Joe, I want to make sure your mic is on.
No, I'm here. And that just makes you question how many people are going to be able to get loans. I mean, the only way to protect yourself is to build in more equity, build in more assurances, and to build in a better defense.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen? I mean, banks are going to be doing these non-QM loans because they're going to have to. If for no other reason, the bank client, the wealth client, is going to demand it. And so they're going to get it, and you're going to get a lot of jumbo loans are going to be non-QM loans because the back-end DTI, the back-end debt-to-income ratio, is going to be higher than 43%. That's the nature of lending on the jumbo side itself. The question is, you know, what's going to happen to everyone else? What's going to happen to those minority borrowers and moderate-income borrowers that, in fact, can't qualify, aren't eligible for a QM loan itself? Are they going to be able to get the non-QM loan? And that's where it's going to be much more difficult. Will there be pressure on the banks? Yeah, there will be absolute pressure because of fair lending concerns along those particular lines. But I think that there's, you know, either intentionally or unintentionally, I would hope unintentionally, a certain segment of society that, you know, is going to have a very difficult time getting financing for housing.
Yeah, a question that I've had is, if you have a QM loan, but then it's determined that for a challenge to the appraisal, or for whatever reason, it's been sold to Fannie and Freddie, and now it's put back to you.
Mm-hmm.
What impact does that have on it being a QM loan?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a great question. I mean, it's not automatically not a QM loan simply because it's been put back to you. You have to look at the individual case. The first thing you look at is, was it put back to me because it wasn't eligible for sale to Fannie or Freddie? That's the first thing that you look at. And if it's not eligible for sale to Fannie and Freddie, the next thing you're going to have to look at is why. If it's not eligible because of some type of underwriting criteria, something that otherwise might go to ability to repay, to QM standard itself, you're going to have a problem on your hands. And you pick out a great example there because you pick out one of the most difficult examples. You're asking about what's going to happen if something gets put back to you, say, because of an appraisal, right? Mm-hmm. And in appraisal and underwriting really go hand in glove. You know, I can make a strong argument that the appraisal process is absolutely part of the underwriting process. You're gonna look at that appraisal, you're gonna look at the value, and then you're gonna move on from there into more in-depth underwriting on that particular borrower and that loan itself. But let's assume that, you know, the property was overappraised, but the borrower otherwise qualified. Did he meet all of the QM standards? It's a tough call. It's a very tough call. You know, I think there are some instances where you'll be able to argue that none of what happened as a result that resulted in this putback has to do with this borrower's ability to repay. And so you may fall into the QM standard anyway. More likely, the vast majority of times you have a putback from Fannie or Freddie or even an indemnification from HUD, you're going to have a loan that's going to fall out of what's known as the temporary QM status, and then you better hope it fits into the what I call the more general QM status, which still has the cap on points and fees, but now has a 43% back-end DTI ratio capped out as well. Mm-hmm. Still may fit that particular standard. If not, you're going to fall into the general ability to repay test. And you're going to have to show that, in fact, this consumer had the ability to repay.
Alice, I want to get back to you, and then I have a specific question I want to ask Mitch of what we should be paying attention to. Alice, you want to follow on with anything on that?
Yeah, just one thing, Mitch. You know, folks trying to identify just simply if they know for sure they're going to stay in they're going to stay out of the red zone, right? I just use a green light, yellow light, red light kind of approach to teaching this to folks who just want to stop having heart attacks. And so the yellow zone, what I call, okay, I've met all the QM requirements. I just, because of the low loan amount, hit a high-priced mortgage loan, and I'm in rebuttable presumption of compliance territory. You know, are you also sending up the same red flags to lenders to not go in even to that arena? You know, I understand folks wanting to stay out of the non-QM space completely, but, you know, can you highlight that there truly is a difference in risk, I think, between rebuttable presumption and truly a non-QM loan?
Yeah, there's a very different risk assessment that you have to do over the rebuttable presumption itself. You know, a rebuttable presumption loan simply says that we're going to assume that this borrower, you know, had the ability to repay, that you otherwise met the standard. But, you know, the borrower has the ability to come back and say, you didn't look close enough because I did not have sufficient residual income or sufficient residual assets to meet my living needs, to meet all of my other living expenses. And so it's going to come down to a contest as to what you knew and whether or not your underwriting standards, you know, have support for them. In other words, whether or not this borrower really did have sufficient residual income, and there's another reason for the default itself. Very different than a safe harbor standard, because under a safe harbor, it's not just an assumption. It is, if you meet all the characteristics of a QM loan that fits a safe harbor, you have met the ability to repay standard itself. Now, that still means you have to underwrite that loan in accordance with what's known as Appendix Q. You know, you came up with the right determination on the debt-to-income ratio itself. But, you know, it's not so much that I counsel people to stay away from rebuttable presumption loans because, you know, you talked about how I love this industry. That's absolutely right, because this industry houses America. And so I hate to see anyone staying away from a rebuttable presumption. I hate to see lenders staying away from a non-QM loan. It's a matter of, you know, how much risk they're willing to take. But what I do hear out there is that aggregators do not want to buy and are not going to buy rebuttable presumption loans as well as non-QM loans from their correspondents. So it's not a matter of you or me or someone else advising that it's a dangerous area. You need an outlet for it. And, you know, lenders, unless they can portfolio their loans, they're not going to have that outlet.
Mitch, looking at the clock, this time just flies by. I want to focus on what you're seeing as the biggest issues out there. What are you and your law firm really zeroing in on, and what are you doing to help your clients and prospective clients, and what should we all be really focusing on? The things we're talking about here, but what else?
The things that we're talking about are on the top of the list. What we haven't talked about really are fair lending issues and fair lending concerns. You know, HUD has issued, because HUD is responsible for the Fair Housing Act, they've issued a rule on disparate impact, and they've set out standards along those particular lines. In this administration, and really for every administration to come, fair lending is going to be on the top of the agenda. It's important. It's an important concept, and lenders, you know, have to look out for it. And we're helping our lenders, our clients, focus on their business rules, focus on their underwriting rules, focus on their overlays, focus on their requirements, so they can see and understand how it impacts various groups. Because that's what the Justice Department is doing right now. That's what HUD is doing right now. That is what the CFPB is doing right now. Beyond that, I mean, there are so many issues, Dave. You know, every year lenders face tremendous challenges. And, you know, 2014 is going to be, you know, no different along those particular lines. There are the regulatory challenges that we just talked about. There's LO compensation, which is going to be pushed up to the forefront.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yep.
Once the new rule kicks in, and I think that the Castle and Cook case was just one message that was sent out to the industry that says, okay, we're coming, we're looking, so make sure you're in compliance along those particular lines. And, you know, we're assisting our clients that are trying to pick up market share. And the ones that are getting out of the business, there's a tremendous amount of consolidation, as you know, in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
And our M&A practice has just, you know, boomed through the roof as a result of that.
What is your focus when you're speaking at the MBA's Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference? In 30 seconds we have left, what is your talk about just to entice people to come and listen to you?
Well, when I talk at the MBA, I'm going to tell them what to expect when the CFPB comes around, when they knock on their door. What it is they're looking at, what it is that they've been finding out there, and how you can make it through and use that particular examination to your benefit to get better and to stay out of trouble as well. That's what we're going to talk about.
Mitch, appreciate you so much being a part of the broadcast. You have always so generously, especially two broadcasts in a row, agreed to be here. And sorry, last week's broadcast again. Looking forward to seeing you in Florida the second half of the first week of December. Folks, be sure to register for that conference. Be sure to get in and listen to Mitch on his segments and his speech at lunch. Mitch, thank you so much. Greet everybody there. And we just got Mitch on a big announcement here using Twitter today. He's got it set up. So look for some tweets. We're going to be tweeting a lot about Mitch and all that he does. Appreciate you so much, Mitch, for being a part of the broadcast and being the advocate that you are for our industry. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet, Mitch. Thank you so much. Folks, we're going to be wrapping up the broadcast. I want to say a special thank you to everybody tuning in. Also, thank you to our sponsor, United Guarantee. Also, come back next week. We're talking about M&A with our special guest, Chuck Klein. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.